With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Hrvoje Moric on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, it's almost the weekend, hour one. We've got a great guest lined up, John Helmer, correspondent in Russia for I don't know how many decades. But first, some news. Italy's first female prime minister officially appointed, Giorgia Meloni. Some people are holding out faith in her. My faith in Meloni as an anti-establishment, anti-globalist candidate is pretty much out the window. Our two guests, Jose Nino Rora, a piece on her for my Geopolitics and Empire website, and questioning her allegiances, loyalties, and she just came out telling off ex-prime minister Berlusconi in the leaked audio to tell him to keep his mouth shut. And basically, she told Berlusconi he must either support NATO's stance on the war or face being left out of her nascent government in what's essentially a message to keep his mouth shut. So I view her, my opinion, as a wolf in sheep's clothing. And others I've spoken to were not very keen on her either. Just the usual, just more of the same, unfortunately. I thought this was interesting. CCP seeks to use TikTok data against Americans. China's communist regime is in a cold war with the U.S. and seeks to use data gathered by companies like TikTok against American interests, according to the Pentagon. The CCP will use apps like TikTok as weapons of mass manipulation and misinformation. What about, you know, the Pentagon using data against Americans? I'm more concerned, frankly, about my government using my data against me, which they have already been doing. What's China? What do I care if? I mean, it's not good that the CCP has my data, but what are they going to do to me, you know, from China? I'm here in Mexico. Meanwhile, my own government is closing my financial accounts. So I really don't care about China at this point when my own government has become a totalitarian dictatorship. So there's that. And there's also reports of TikTok failing to prevent 90% of election misinformation, where TikTok approved most political advertisements containing false and misleading information about U.S. elections. Again, for me, this is all a joke. The fact that there's even something called election misinformation, in my point of view, I don't think there's anything such as election misinformation. Either you let the populace think for ourselves, and we determine what is disinformation, truth, or misinformation. That's democracy. Otherwise, there's no such thing as democracy. If you're going to appoint, you know, government-approved censors where the government tells you what is disinformation, misinformation, what is true, that's not democracy. That's like managed democracy. Effectively, that's dictatorship. There's no more. In the good old days, people would read the papers, they listen to everyone, they make up their own mind. Yes, there's misinformation, disinformation, but we are the deciders. As was it George Bush that said that? I am the decider. So, yeah, just this whole idea that of election information shouldn't even exist, but we live in a technocracy, in a plutocracy, oligarchy managed democracy, totalitarian democracy, friendly fascism, as some have written about many decades ago. And on top of that, you have the UN anti-misinformation push that spreads offline. There's a new poster campaign, a verified campaign. The UN is rolling out its anti-misinfo campaign with posters that have been spotted on the subway in Australia, The campaign was launched 2 years ago, and they're through so-called information volunteers. These volunteers will receive content to debunk in their communities, and the verified information will be posted online in traditional platforms. But I don't believe the UN. Antonio Gutierrez, UN SecGen, says we cannot cede our virtual spaces to those who traffic in lies, fear, and hate. If you ask me, SecGen, you traffic in lies, fear, and hate. So anyways, up is down, black is white, boy is girl, man is woman, 2 + 2 = 5. That's the world we live in. How do we make our way back to the world we used to live in? That's a question we're all asking ourselves. Don't forget, we have a new interactive live chat room feature at tntradio.live. You just go to the website, bottom right-hand corner. Also, for all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, at the top of the tntradio.live website, there's a What's On events calendar. You can also submit stuff there if you wanted to appear there. So that's one way to stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Keeping you updated on the latest.
In the car while I'm driving home.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Following Big Pharma's, CDC's advisory committee on immunization practices voting 15-0 to add DARPA gene therapy, COVID-1984 shots to the children's recommended vaccine schedule, which is now 70 plus shots. Two things happened almost simultaneously that no one who's been paying attention should find surprising in the least. One, a handful of Republican governors were quick to react by vowing not to institute mandates in their states. And two, at least one of the makers of the aforementioned COVID-19 shots has announced their plan to increase the price of their jab slightly by only, 400%. Here with an update on these malevolent, crazy developments and more is TNT Radio's Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
I like your corrections there. I would agree with you, sir. The big news today, folks, it happened. The quote-unquote COVID-19 vaccine has been placed as a quote-unquote recommendation from 6 months of age and older, as well as being approved for the federally funded Vaccine for Kids program, which provides these quote-unquote vaccines to children at no or low cost to families. Of course, yesterday, good old Senator Rand Paul came out pretty much immediately and called the CDC's decision appalling, urging that there is no scientific evidence that the vaccines have any advantages for children at all. Of course, the governor, the Republican governors are stepping up and following suit, led by none other than Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is promising not to institute any COVID vax mandates. He said, quote, "As long as I'm governor in Florida, there will not be a COVID-19 vaccine mandate for children in our schools." Awesome. He continued, "That is your decision to make as a parent. These are new shots. I get a kick out of it when people compare it to MMR, things that have been around for decades and decades," end quote. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee also said something similar on Twitter. He says, "I've always said mandates are the wrong approach, and Tennessee has led in pushing back on federal COVID vaccine requirements. Thanks to our work with General Assembly, Tennessee families won't be impacted by today's CDC vote. We'll continue to stand for Tennessee children and for personal freedom." Man, I love to hear it. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt followed suit on their Twitter. "Regardless of what the CDC says, as long as I am governor, we will never force kids to get a COVID vaccine to go to school." Awesome. One more. This one's from Alabama Governor Kay Ivey. "Here in Alabama, the parents make decisions when it comes to their children's health care. We do not mandate the COVID shot for kids, nor will we ever." Woo, this is great. I'm loving this. Absolutely loving this. But you know who's hating this? Obviously, the makers of the shots, because they're already suffering a shrinking market. Not the least of which is thanks to the idea of, there's So a lot of experts coming out and actually warning that there's some dangers associated with these things. So turns out, you know, and since the pandemic and the emergency is over, according to Joe Biden recently, basically there's fewer people taking these things. So, you know, what's Pfizer's answer? They're just going to hike the price of the one in the United States by up to 400%. That's up to four times, people. As in a report, thanks to the Epoch Times, it says Pfizer is looking to raise the price of its COVID-19 vaccines in the U.S. by up to four times once Washington's purchase program ends. And this is according to the company's U.S. President, Angela Lukin. See, currently, this vaccine is provided free for all Americans by the U.S. government, taxpayers. Next year, when the U.S. public health emergency expires, the COVID-19 vaccine market will move to private insurance. And the federal government is currently paying approximately $30 per dose for the Pfizer jab. When the government purchase shuts down, Lukin says she expects the dose to be priced around $110 to $130 per dose. So do the math, folks. That's quite the hike right there. The Pfizer executive is expecting the vaccine purchase to transfer to the private sector, quote, at the earliest by first quarter 2023. And according to Lukin, the vaccine will continue to be available for free for people who have government or private insurance. Just to put things in perspective, folks, Pfizer made almost $37 billion in the year 2021 through COVID-19 vaccine sales, with overall revenues doubling to $81.3 billion. They're expecting their revenue to reach $98 to $102 billion this year. Man, I'm starting to think I'm in the wrong business. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think I'm going to go work for Baxter, or Pfizer, or whichever one of these pharmaceuticals. No, it's not about the money. It's about doing what's... I honestly could never work for a pharmaceutical like that. There's no way. But I was just reading earlier this week, Switzerland's going to dump like 10 million plus doses of their unused Moderna or Pfizer or whatever vaccines. So we saw this a decade ago. I was in 2009 when I was studying in Switzerland. I was a staff assistant to the Czech mission to the UN health section, and I was at the 62nd World Health Assembly right when the whole swine flu thing was going on. And I recall vividly, like, most countries threw out like 80+% of their vaccines. Most people did not even take them. Like 80 to 90% of the people did not take them. And it's like, we're seeing some of that now. And it's just big pharma, biodefense, industrial complex. I'm sure you're going to have some upper class Mexicans, some laptop class Mexicans flying to Texas, to California to get their juice. I've heard of many Mexicans of that sort, the ones that emulate America, that will do whatever the experts, whatever America says. They're more developed, they know best, we will do whatever they say. There were a bunch of these Mexicans flying to Texas and California getting, you know, their vaccine shots. Nevertheless, there's going to be people getting them. I hope that number is dwindling. What do you think?
I'd like to think so. I think clearly this is a sign. This is yet more evidence for us who read and analyze the news that people aren't taking it, literally. So much so that they have to raise the price of it, because the only way they've been able to make money off of this is by leeching off of government money, which is actually taxpayer money. I mean, the governments are paying for this, but at the end of the day, who pays for anything for the government? It's the people, right? So don't kid yourselves, folks. None of this stuff was free. And then just the vaccine makers, people like Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, the billionaires of the world, didn't throw their personal money into this to, you know, to help fight the invisible enemy. No, that you did. We all did. And, you know, we're all paying the ultimate price now with the economy, plus the, you know, all of this this case of suddenly dying that we're seeing all around the world, which probably has absolutely nothing to do with these vaccines, obviously. You know, I'm being sarcastic here, but what surprised me, Herbori, is that we would see a headline like this within 24 hours of them. What the news is that everybody's talking about is the fact that they put this vaccine on the recommended schedule, courtesy of the CDC, for schools. And then the very next day, you get a headline like this talking about, you know, a vaccine maker, you know, hey, we got to make billions of dollars. And then the only way we can do that is to charge you an arm and a leg for these things, which now you're being told are required for your kids to go to school. It seems a little tone deaf and a little bit in your face. And maybe it's just a sign that we're well past the point of anyone recognizing conflict of interest anymore. It's totally sad.
Yeah, but I really can't wait for those, you know, cancer vaccines that are coming in the pipe that's going to cure cancer. You just take a jab and it'll probably give you cancer. But and speaking of vaccine harm, back again is my fellow countryman Mislav Kolakušić, a European MEP from Croatia, and he's coming out today. He just published. He said, "What do you think is the shocking increase in excess mortality in 2022 in the EU a consequence of climate change, the green transition, or is the cause something else?" I'll go for, what is that, C, something else. We'll talk to you again soon, Adam, and we'll be right back after this break.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
Do you think that the medical profession has been really dumbed down in the last 15 or 20 years?
Well, I think they probably have, in a way, and without even realizing it, because the pharmaceutical industry, big pharma, let's use the word big pharma, since the mid-1980s, has had a blank check on vaccine development, where they've been relieved of any, you know, and they're immune from any legal attacks, any class actions, right, against vaccine injury. That's basically what happened in the mid-1980s. So they've now just producing any old thing, whether it works or not. So, you know, they're getting away with extraordinary...
Sounds like 007 to me.
Yeah, but I think along with that, with their massive propaganda campaigns that all doctors experience in their surgeries, you know, with information sheets, flyers from pharmaceutical companies, drug companies all the time, the invitations to lectures or, you know, to go to seminars, and then the actual bribery, you know, actually paying people money to give public lectures, paying people money to go to conferences, funding their research, all that sort of stuff, compromises the medical profession in a big way. But I think the compromising began in the medical schools.
Weekends are better when you spend it with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
On the day that he was inaugurated, the Washington Post had an article on impeaching him.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Donald J. Trump is now president of the United States.
They had an absolute legitimate meltdown.
If you try to change a system that big, the system fights back.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
I actually became infuriated that someone had allowed Zuckerberg to tip the scale.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided.
This was the greatest billionaire assault on election integrity we've ever seen.
A billionaire-funded plot against the president.
Do you believe that they used the COVID emergency as an excuse to pull this partisan voter turnout operation?
Am I allowed to give you a one-word answer? Yes.
Rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com. Elon Musk wants Jack Dorsey to turn over Twitter info on spam or spam bot accounts. Yet the Australian government and Digi, which includes Twitter, wants to address fake bots and fake accounts. The disinformation and misinformation is from the government and big tech. Disagree with what government is saying and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to digi.org.au. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
Joining me is John Helmer, the longest continuously serving foreign correspondent in Russia and the only Western journalist to direct his own bureau, independent of single national or commercial ties. He first set up his bureau way back in 1989, making him today the doyen of the Foreign Press Corps in Russia. His website is johnhelmer.net. His Twitter is @bears_with, because his website is also called Dances with Bears. And he's got a lot of books, which you can find on his website. You can purchase them, the physical copies, or easily purchase the digital copies. Welcome to TNT, Mr. Helmer.
Thank you very much, Herr Voyer. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking the time. You know, I've been reading your blog and website for years. It's been a great resource. And I know you did a great interview recently with Matt Arendt, who is a frequent guest of mine on TNT and my Geopolitics and Empire podcast. And you went into depth there with Matt regarding your amazing, you know, work experience and background in Russia. So I don't want to rehash that here. And I direct people to Matt Arendt's site to listen to that 90-minute interview on your life experience. But if you could give the audience, you know, the real quick 2-minute version of the work you've done in Russia.
Well, a 2-minute version starts with, I've had a career working for political losers, Herr Voyer. I started with the Prime Minister of Australia, Gough Whitlam, who was overthrown and removed in 1975. I went on to work in Jimmy Carter's administration, which ended in January 1980, replaced by Ronald Reagan. I went then to work for in the office of Greek Prime Minister Andreas Papandreou, and he was defeated in the election of 1989, won subsequently, and then died. And after all of that experience, I moved to the then Soviet Union to open a news bureau, like you said, an independent one, in Moscow in 1989, at the beginning of the end of Mikhail Gorbachev. So that's the preliminary. I'm used to the politics of massive defeat, destruction of culture, political losses that can't be repaired. What more would you like to know about my background?
No, that's fascinating. I'm familiar with that. And I would, again, direct people to your interview with Matt, where you go into a lot of detail. And I'm curious, you know, I managed to meet some interesting folks when I went to Moscow in 2017 with Sharon Tennyson, with her Center for Citizens Initiatives. We met Gorby Gorbachev, the late Gorbachev, and Vladimir Posner, and other folks. You know, Gorbachev was actually invited to my 2009 Geneva School of Diplomacy graduation to receive an honorary degree, and he wasn't able to make it. His right-hand man, Pavel Poroshenko, came in his stead, and I met Pavel again in 2017. Over the years, did you get to meet any interesting Russian characters that you can reveal to us, as well as, you know, any thoughts on, you know, Gorbachev, who he was?
Well, I don't talk about my sources for the obvious reasons. If they wanted to talk, my Russian sources, after all these years, have never been burned by me. If they want to broadcast who they were or who they still are, that's their decision. As for Mikhail Gorbachev, I think he was a discreditable, dishonorable, stupid man. And I've made it very clear in a number of pieces. So you go to my website, put in Gorbachev in the search box, and what will come up is a man who never learned a lesson from anybody or anybody, anything he read. I have no respect whatever for his record, no respect for his personality. He could never speak Russian in a normal way, and he's better off left dead and buried.
And I think that's the feeling of most Russians today, given my, you know, interactions with Russians. He does seem to have been an agent of the West, in, you know, wittingly, unwittingly. But I also did want to touch on...
Let's be clear. The man was a witting participant in all of the discreditable things he left behind. And in the most recent piece I wrote about him, not obituaries, but it's perfectly clear that the so-called problem we now face, the not one inch to the east promise of James Baker, that launched the willingness of Gorbachev and the Soviet commander at the time to accept the terms of withdrawal from Germany, never included a reciprocal withdrawal of NATO forces from Western Germany when Gorbachev agreed to the withdrawal of the Red Army from Eastern Germany. And why he did that? Well, it's pretty clear from the record. He did it to boost his own vanity, boost his own political standing. The man's vanity and his wife's contribution to that vanity were monumental in generating the mistakes he made, which continue to resound as the problem we now face when Russia has been threatened by the continuous advance of missile, military, and other and economic warfare threats to its very borders and inside its own borders. So the less said about Gorbachev, the better.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. And we're going to have to take a quick vodka break, a quick news break. We'll be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Former Trump advisor Steve Bannon has been sentenced to 4 months behind bars for contempt of Congress after being convicted of refusing to cooperate with the Democrat-led committee investigating last year's Capitol riot. The House committee investigating the January 6th Capitol breach announced Friday it has sent a subpoena to former President Donald Trump. First Lady Jill Biden claimed in an interview that her son Hunter Biden is innocent of any crime.
If you miss your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
So, Mr. Helmer, you've covered so much over the years on your Dances with Bears site at johnhelmer.net. And before getting on to the situation with NATO and Ukraine and everything, I've just been curious about the whole Novichok Skripal thing. No one's talking about it anymore. You were covering this in absolute detail. The story's gone down the memory hole. It seems to have been another put-up job by the West. I'm wondering, where are the Skripals? Whatever happened to them? And could you just briefly sort of give us your take on what the whole Novichok Skripal thing was all about?
Nobody knows, Herr Royer, where the Skripals are. And it isn't quite so that the case has been buried or even that they've been buried. They may not be alive, but they have not quite been buried. The reason is that the British government is continuing an inquest into the cause of death of Dawn Sturgis. This was the unfortunate woman who allegedly died of a Novichok poisoning concealed in a perfume bottle in an apartment of a friend several months after the Skripal attack occurred in March of 2018. The inquest, I should say, under coronial law was abandoned by the British government since 2018 and turned into a public inquiry. That's to be understood as in inverted commas, because under British coronial law, a public inquiry can take secret evidence out of public accountability. A coronial inquest cannot. So the coronial inquest into whether Ms. Sturgis died of Novichok poisoning or something else, the evidence of that can be held in taken in secret. And so there's a public inquiry underway. The public inquiry began early this year. It comes up for another hearing in November, in about 3 weeks' time. And strangely enough, because I've been asking for this in print for some time now, the Skripals are identified as interested persons and potential witnesses. They have been assigned a lawyer. His appearance in court means that somebody ordered him to appear for them, but this lawyer will not provide any answers as to how he was engaged. And the only time that he's been asked to speak for the Skripals by the retired judge running this inquiry, he said nothing at all. So the Skripals, if they're alive, if they're not in prison, if they're not being held incommunicado, would have the opportunity to speak for the first time in several years through this lawyer, only he's silent. The public inquiry, taking the Skripals' evidence, and after all, they're the only known survivors of such a Novichok attack as began this public narrative back in 2018. If they testify, let's see if they can testify in public, because they haven't been heard even from their family for all these years. So this is a hearing, and this is a process, Herr Royer, which everybody will be able to attend to, focus on, watch the live stream in mid-November, and then read the transcript to see if the Skripals are still alive and not in a British prison.
It's like a James Bond film, and more point before.
No women, no special effects. The special effect in the Skripal case is that these people survived Novichok allegedly, but are not allowed to testify to what happened. That's remarkable. As for the James Bond effects, we know for sure that the attack that occurred allegedly March 4, 2018 was filmed by CCTV cameras. Not one of those pieces of film has ever been allowed by the British government, the British police, or anyone else to be shown. On the other hand, the alleged perpetrators of the alleged crime, the two so-called Russian agents, multiple footage of them has been published to inculpate them. Well, not the footage of their approaching the Skripal's house, but only footage of them going through airports, going through railway turnstiles and walking up and down the street a good distance away from the Skripal house. So it's a farcical manipulation of special effects but it doesn't produce any good humor, but it certainly produces more audience belief than a James Bond movie would do.
So you've been working in news and media and with propaganda and for so many years. Why does it always seem like when it comes to U.S., Russia, West versus East, pretty much everything the U.S. and Europe say is a lie, is false, is a false flag? I speak as a European American. I don't have any particular preference, for the East or Russia, but it just seems, chemical weapons in Syria, U.S. false flag. We had the OPCW whistleblowers. The Novichok seems like a false flag. The media, such as Bellingcat, paid NATO agent propagandists. The Nord Stream attacks, Dugina assassination, Kerch Crimea bridge. They tried to take out the Turk Stream. I don't believe anything anymore that's coming from the West. What's your response to that?
Well, I think that you're right there, Herr Voyager. Your reaction is the same as normal American listeners to this program, normal listeners, whether they're in the United States, in Canada, or in Europe, or anywhere else for that matter. The degree to which the mass media have been propaganda platforms has discredited them fundamentally. And you can see from measurements, credible measurements of audience response, that nobody believes what they've read, except the people who produce it and the members of parliament that vote the money to run these wars. So propaganda is a highly lucrative business to be in, whether you work for a purported university or a purported think tank or a purported mass medium, whether you are engaged at the University of London or in the Washington Post. This is a business that's very lucrative for its participants. And the parliamentary approvals for these flows of money have increased. They haven't stopped. At the same time, the audience for the belief in such stuff has dwindled and dwindled and dwindled, so that you have your radio and a great proliferation of podcasting on the internet, and you have internet reading, the so-called alternative media, the only place where people, normal people who don't believe what they read, come to listen to alternatives. And the alternatives give people the same chance that the mass media no longer give, which is, here are two sets of facts. Here's the evidence. What's the courtroom standard for considering whether things are true or false? Well, the courtroom standard in a case of murder is beyond reasonable doubt. The courtroom standard, the British courtroom standard, the Canadian courtroom standard, the United States courtroom standard for civil cases is a balance of probabilities. That's the way a normal person views what they listen to or read. And with a bit of help from all of the alternative media and valuable broadcasters like you, Herr Voyer, people can understand at the level of balance of probabilities, or if it's death, beyond reasonable doubt. Those are the standards. By those standards, and those are the standards I try to work to, the MH17 aircraft was not shot down by the people accused of the crime. So to keep repeating that, as the mass media do and will do in a couple of weeks' time when the rigged verdict is brought in, it is a propaganda fake, fabrication, and a lie.
Yeah, it's I'm thankful that we have this independent media. You know, even before I started podcasting and on TNT Radio, I was able to cut my teeth and figure out what's going on. And now I'm helping others to do so as well. And so Ukraine, you know, the current situation in Ukraine, you know, we've got Oliver Stone's Ukraine on Fire. We know about the coup. You had the 2004 Orange Revolution, Color Revolution, then you had 2014. So what's happening now seems to be, in my view, the war for the world. You know, my take is the Western globalist American empire is going for the gold, you know, Rand Corporation, all of that, full spectrum dominance, you know, with the Pentagon, Brussels, Wall Street, London, NATO, all in tow to not knock out all remaining holdouts, you know, Syria, they tried, Libya, Yemen, North Korea, Russia, and China, in order to set up, you know, world government, a planetary regime, an empire, you know, a true global empire for the first time in history. It's like the stuff of Star Wars. What's sort of your take on where we are and what's going on in Ukraine?
I agree with you about the stakes. They're life or death stakes, Herr Voyer. The last book I published, called The Jackal's Wedding, tells the story of how, the subtitle is American Power, Arab Revolt. It tells the story of the liquidation of secular Arab independence movements from 1943 on till 1980. It stops before the deaths of Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi. But the secular Arabism, the secular Arab thinking, the secular Arab choice in the Middle East is fighting, as you said, a last-ditch battle in Syria. But the movement itself has been virtually destroyed. Now, in the war in Europe, we have a life or death situation in which the Russian side has taken the view that it has been unable to reach non-aggression treaty agreements with either the United States or with NATO, and that the gradual transformation of Ukraine into a gun platform to destroy Russia is the last-ditch attempt to continue the war that allegedly ended in 1945 with the defeat of Germany. This time, as it was in 1945, the Germans have decided to continue the war against Moscow. And this time, as the US General Staff were hoping back in the late 40s, would happen, Germany is aligned with the United States to continue the war to destroy Russia. That's a war for the future of Europe. It's not only a war for the future of the US control and dominance of Europe, but that part you correctly described. Now, what does a war in Europe now mean when Russia is better equipped in many ways than it's ever been to continue not only the war in Europe, but to fight for its survival in the rest of the world? Why is it better equipped? Because China is no longer the decimated, destroyed power it was as Japan left it. Neither is Vietnam, as the Japanese or the French left Vietnam. And neither is India, as debilitated as the British colonial administration left it. Neither is Africa. So you could say that the war for Europe that was continued since 1945 in different ways is now a war for the world. That's a terrible thing to say because it threatens our lives everywhere, wherever we are. But never before in living memory, and my living memory is not so long, never before has the Russian side been allied so strongly with China, Vietnam, India. And that's very important. I'm not leaving out Africa, particularly Russian relations with South Africa and Nigeria, among others. But what's transformed the situation that we now are facing for all of us, wherever we're listening, is a war for the world.
We're going to have to jump to a break, John. Again, the website is johnhelmer.net, and check out some of his books. We'll be right back on TNT.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I've talked a lot about Europe and the eastern part of the United States getting cold from mid-November into December at least. And the latest long-range forecast is starting to confirm that there's a lot of blocking, locking over the top. And when the block locks, the weather rocks. Remember that. Tell that to other people. You'll impress them with it. But what about the Far East? Well, the Japanese model is in, and it says this is going to be one nasty winter in the Far East. It could be as bad as the winter of 2012-2013, which went down as one of the coldest winters in China in the last 50 years. And, of course, this is a major player as far as energy goes, that area of the world. It's interesting in that when you get cold in the Far East, you're usually cold in Eastern North America and Western Europe. It's called teleconnections. There, you've got a great little saying to say, and you learned about teleconnections. You're ready to be a weather person. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Central banks have advanced plans for digital currencies. In a March 2021 open letter, International Monetary Fund Division Chief Tommaso Mancini-Grifoli wrote, "The cash you spend at the market may one day be replaced by a central bank digital currency. Yes, the stuff I work on at the IMF. And a registered digital wallet would make sure money doesn't go to the wrong people, like a terrorist group." He didn't say that the wrong people may include truckers protesting a tyrannical government, but veto powers proposed for central bank digital currencies would enable governments to do just that with minimal effort. The World Economic Forum's Central Bank Digital Currency Policy Maker Toolkit explains veto powers for transactional approval, which a nation's central bank will dictate to other financial institutions.
Child labor and toxic leaks, the price we pay for a greener future. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We are back on our final segment with John Helmer, the longest continuously serving foreign correspondent in Russia. Check out his website, johnhelmer.net. He's got some great books there as well. And so we've been talking about the war for the world, which I hope doesn't come to, you know, third world war. Belarus, there's talk of Belarus, troop movements. Your latest piece talks about how Russia has been knocking out the electricity infrastructure in Ukraine. There's talk of tactical mini nukes on both sides. Washington just keeps throwing money at Kiev and Zelensky. I think there's another round of $50 billion they're talking about. How do you see things proceeding from here? And where do you see things going?
Well, it's too big a question, and I have to qualify my answer, Hervoya. I don't talk about the battlefield, and I don't speculate about tactical operations or what the map means. Those things are being that's warfare. Talk's cheap, and it's better, I think, we focus on the future that you asked about. If we look at what Russians say, what the Russian government says, what the Russian general staff say, what the circumstances will be as we head towards a potentially climactic moment when President Putin is in Bali, Indonesia, for the G20 summit, when President Biden will be there and possibly Mr. Zelensky. By then, and we're looking at 3 weeks away, are we not? The capacity of the Ukraine Central Command, based in Lvov or on the Polish side of the border, to command so-called assaults and attacks and offensives in the Ukrainian East will have been tested and will have failed. The electric wars, as I'm trying to report it, is aimed at preventing a continuation of the war at long distance by the NATO side using the Ukrainian gun platform and commanded from Lvov and Kiev. If and when that succeeds by November 15, the judgment will have to be on the part of the United States 1 week after Mr. Biden has faced Election Day and will have either more or less control of Congress, with more or less Republican opposition to footing the terrible bill that you just described, Hervoya. We will see whether Mr. Biden and his general staff, as distinct from Antony Blinken and Victoria Nuland, the two proponents of continuing war to the last Ukrainian and to the last German and to the last Pole, that faction will either have been overcome by events, by the battlefield circumstances, and by the European approach of winter to reach terms of armistice, terms of settlement, which would eliminate the threat to Russia and to the new shape of the Ukraine as it will appear on November the 15th. That's the timing that we all have to keep in mind. And maybe we come back at or just after November 15 to see how the political consequences of what will happen between now and November 15 on the battlefield have played out. But that's the time frame listeners to this broadcast should have in mind. Obviously, if you're in the United States, you're very interested in what will happen on Election Day, November 8th. That's 1 week before November 15. This is the time all Americans know for the so-called October surprise. Zelensky knows to pull off an October surprise, he has very few days left. And throwing promises of money, promises of replacement electricity generators from Germany, promises don't count now. Delivery counts, battlefield counts, and he hasn't got much time to pull off his surprise. American voters very clearly don't rate Mr. Biden's chances of a pulling off a wartime or war battlefield surprise very highly. It's true that US voters tell pollsters, and they don't tell them everything, you understand. US voters tell pollsters they don't disapprove the Biden administration's handling of the war in Ukraine as much as they disapprove of inflation, shortages, and everything else, all of which stem from the war and the sanctions disruption of the US economy. So let's see how the battlefield goes in the way I've tried to sketch in writing and just tried to summarize in words. Let's see how it looks November 14, before November 14. Let's see if the Blinken-Newland combination, which has brought the United States to its present state and brought ruin on the Ukraine, Germany, Poland, and other countries in Europe, will be able to prevail and continue the war. If they prevail, then we can come back and you can ask me questions about what happens after nothing happens in Bali, if that's the outcome.
And, another thought, there's been this sort of word salad, this talk of BRICS plus Saudi Arabia wants to join. There's talk now today of Indonesia wanting to join and, you know, this multipolar world idea. Putin has come out and said, talked about Glaziev as well, Sergei Glaziev, the economist, of a new financial architecture in the East, a new international reserve, digital currencies, and all of this sort of stuff. Do you think there's meat to this idea? Is it? It seems to be slow moving. I'm not sure. How much meat there is to this idea. How do you sort of see the rest of the world creating a new structure?
Wow, that's a big question, and I prefer to take it region by region. Mm-hmm. You're right, Hervoya. There's been a transformation in the approach of the Saudis to a Middle East settlement. There, obviously, from a Saudi point of view, we can discuss their perception of Iran as a threat. We can discuss the proposals for a Persian Gulf pact, non-aggression pact involving on the Arab side and on the Iranian side, a resolution of the kinds of threats that threaten all of the Arab states historically and threaten the Iranians as well. Such transformation in Arab politics, in Sheikhdom politics, in Saudi politics are brand new. And we can't generalize from there to the threats to China and the threats in other regions of the world, like India, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. So I'm disinclined to try to summarize all of this because we've got a very hot war going on, just as you've said, and that's far from settled. We have the weakest array of European governments ever to face a strong Russian government in the history of Europe. I mean, do we need to remind everybody the chaos in London, the chaos in Berlin, the chaos in Paris, and do we need to add Warsaw and some of the other capitals as well? Never has Europe, I've left out Rome, okay? Never has Europe been so weak. That doesn't bode well for the ability of the Europeans to come to an armistice and terms of non-aggression. It doesn't, never has a presidential administration been directed by such a weak individual, a mortally ill, medically debilitated individual as President Biden presents himself to be at the moment. And politically, all the indications are he will be politically much weaker after November the 8th. So the situation of weakness generates very regrettably desperation on the part of ambitious individuals who want to preserve their wealth and their power for as long as possible. Desperation produces desperate measures. Desperate measures on the battlefield mean that the Ukrainians shell the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, hoping to release nuclear radiation, a far more dangerous nuclear weapon pointed at Germany and France than anything in the propaganda of so-called battlefield nuclears. Weakness also produces the attempt by Mr. Zelensky to threaten to launch a hydroelectric dam attack at Kakhovka. I guess all of us in the British colonial education system will remember the famous dam buster raid when the British bombed burnt German dams. I don't recall that anyone ever regarded that as a war crime. So we face
John. We're out of time, John. 15 seconds. We're gonna have to continue this conversation. Thank you so much for coming on, JohnHelmer.net. Buy some of his books, and thank you so much, John. Really amazing analysis. We'll be right back on TNT.